You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey. When you retire, will your to-do list go away? Of course not. It'll join you in your new adventures. It'll just have different things on it. There may be some other things you want to take from your corporate life to help in your transition to your new life. One thing I brought from my corporate life is the practice of GTD, getting things done. And today I'm thrilled to have the opportunity to talk with its creator, David Allen, on how GTD might be useful in this phase of life, especially since so many people are including work in some way in retirement today. David Allen is widely recognized as the world's leading expert on personal and organizational productivity. His 30-year pioneering research and coaching to corporate managers and CEOs of some of America's most prestigious corporations and institutions has earned him Forbes' recognition as one of the top five executive coaches in the U.S. and Business 2.0 magazine's inclusion in their list of the 50 who matter now. Time magazine called his flagship book, Getting Things Done, the definitive business self-help book of the decade. Fast Company magazine called David one of the world's most influential thinkers in the arena of personal productivity for his outstanding programs in writing on time and stress management, the power of aligned focus and vision, and his groundbreaking methodologies in management and executive peak performance. David is the international best-selling author of Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity, Ready for Anything, 52 Productivity Principles for Work and Life, and Making It All Work, Winning at the Game of Work and the Business of Life. He is the engineer of GTD, the popular Getting Things Done methodology that has shown millions how to transform a fast-paced, overwhelming, overcommitted life into one that is balanced, integrated, relaxed, and has more successful outcomes. GTD's broad appeal is based on the fact that it is applicable from the boardroom to the living room to the classroom. It is hailed as life-changing by students, busy parents, entrepreneurs, and corporate executives. David is the founder and chairman of the David Allen Company, whose inspirational seminars, coaching, educational materials, and practical products present individuals and organizations with a new model for winning at the game of work and business of life. He continues to write articles and essays that address today's ever-changing issues about living and working in a fast-paced world, sustaining balance, control, and meaningful focus. David, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Joe, thanks for the invitation. Glad to.
So as someone who's used Getting Things Done for about 20 years now, I've been thinking about how useful it can be beyond the work world for people who are transitioning to retirement and more specifically to later life. And with retirement being so different these days, and it's lasting now 20 to 30 years or more, people are quite active and they still have a lot to get done. It's just a different set of things. And one of the things that's always stuck with me about your work is the phrase, mind like water. And for those who might not be familiar with GTD, could you just share a brief description of your methodology and the principles behind it?
Sure. Basically, your head's a crappy office. The whole idea is to get stuff out of your head that has your attention. Things have your attention usually when they're not yet on cruise control, when you're not yet totally appropriately engaged with them. I need cat food. I need a vice president. I need to figure out what to do with my grandkids, you know, yada, yada. So whatever's on your mind needs to get off your mind, not ignore it. As a matter of fact, the opposite. You need to get it out in front of you and then walk yourself through the process. Call, okay, what are you going to do about that? What's the outcome you're committed to complete about that? And what's the action step that you would need to take to move the needle on it? So that's the first two steps of how do you get control and focus in anywhere. And that's the capture and clarify steps. Very important for people to do that about whatever's on their mind, personal, professional, little or big. And by the way, if you don't give appropriate attention to the things that have your attention, they'll take more of your attention than they deserve. So the, a bit of a counterintuitive thing about this is my methodology needs to apply as much rigor to cat food as to get a life or decide whether to get divorced or not or figure out what you're going to do with elder care. So all those things that are on your mind, this is a methodology that then engages you with them appropriately so that they're not banging around in your head and waking you up at 3 o'clock in the morning when you can't do anything about them. So we know the cognitive scientists have now proven in the last few years, something I learned just on the streets 35 years ago. Again, your head's a crappy office. Your head's for having ideas, but not for hanging on to them or trying to remember or remind or prioritize inside your head. You can't do that. You can do a little bit, but not nearly as well as you can if you get it all externalized in some external system. So step one, capture the stuff that's got your attention, write it down, put it somewhere, and then sooner than later, decide what exactly you're going to do about it. Step two. Step three, organize the results of that in some sort of trusted external brain. You know, your calendar, a list manager, something where you put reminders of the errands you need to run, stuff you need to talk to your spouse about, things like that. And then step four is make sure you're looking at this external brain appropriately. So you remember what the errands you need to run when you go out, or that you remember or that you have in front of you the stuff you need to talk to your partner about or your whoever. And then step five is just you engage. You put your attention in your activities based upon a trusted choice out of all the options of your almost infinite number of possibilities and options that people have in terms of stuff they could be doing this afternoon or tonight. So that's a simple thing, is the capture, clarify, organize, reflect, and engage five-step thing. I didn't make that up. I just identified what you do when you get your kitchen in order if you're having guests over. That's what you do. It's what you do when you try to get control of anything, your desk, your head, your whatever. And I just made those conscious and objective in terms of what those behaviors are. But most people are not doing those. They're doing a little bit. So it's not like something they need to learn a new skill or new language or new technology. Everybody knows how to write stuff down. Everybody knows how to make a decision about a next action or something. Everybody knows how to keep lists. And everybody knows how to look at a list and make a choice about what to do. So it's not like something new in terms of behaviors. But the set of these behaviors put appropriately together in a complete way so that your head is relieved of the job of remembering and reminding, which it does not do very well, then that's the big game changer.
You have a great tool in your system, the someday maybe list.
Yay.
And when you retire, someday is suddenly here.
Yeah, no kidding. Really.
And one of the best things about retirement is the freedom it offers, but there's a lot that changes around you. And one thing that doesn't change is still have that 168 hours in the week to work with, and all those hours that were previously dedicated to full-time work are now free to be reallocated. And there are so many possibilities, and for some people, it can be very overwhelming. What do you recommend people do to get clear on their priorities?
Well, go through this process. Write down everything that's on your mind. Stuff you might want to do, stuff you need to handle, stuff you're dealing with. You know, I wouldn't worry too much about the long-term future if your day-to-day is out of control. So make sure that your day-to-day is under control. And that doesn't mean control, like control your kids or the weather or whatever. Good luck. I'm talking about having something under control, like your kitchen or a meeting or your desk or your head. And the way to do that is make sure that you get all that stuff out of your head that's banging around in there. Because if it's just in your mind, that place has no sense of past or future. So there's a part of you psychologically that actually thinks you should be doing all that all the time. That's why people are walking around this ambient anxiety that's creating so much stress for people. It's the stress of opportunity. You know, there's so many things, to your point, there's so many things now that you're retired. I know a lot of people that are flunking retirement because they just don't know what to do with themselves. And that's understandable. But if they'd been keeping a list of their someday maybes, go, okay, which someday maybe shall I activate now? Do I really want to write the great American novel? Is it time to start thinking about learning to paint? Is it time to, you know, learn the flute? Whatever. And those are the kinds of things that once people start to get a hold of that, but you just need to identify what are those things? What are those things that have your attention? And if you're totally fine with where you are, in other words, there's nothing on your mind except cooking dinner and, you know, just being nice and loving your Zoom chats with your kids and, you know, whatever, that's fine. It's just that there are a whole lot of people out there, to your point, that 70 is sort of the new 50.
So almost half the people back here in the U.S. retire earlier than planned. So there's a period of transition involved with a lot of uncertainty in figuring out what's next. And it doesn't feel like it while you're going through it, but that period of time can be a true gift in retrospect. How can your horizons of focus help use that time wisely?
Again, I didn't make them up. I just identified what actually creates people's priorities. there's different horizons. We have commitments with ourselves, whether you're conscious of them or not, they're there. At the top level, what I call horizon five, you know, we use sort of ground level and then horizon one, two, three, four, five. The top level horizon five would be, why are you on the planet? What's your purpose as a human being? How are you doing? What are your core values? What really, really, really matters to you? So getting clear about those are going to be your driver. You don't want to be off purpose or off standard in terms of your life and what you're doing. But, you know, as knowing what that is or having a sense of what that is that going to help you decide what you don't want to do tonight? Yeah, a little bit. You know, but then you need probably if you step down to horizon four would be what's your vision of how you're going to be lifestyle, career-wise or retirement-wise 3, 4, 5 years from now if your life was as good as it can be? Do you have that picture? And that's where you may have the same purpose as your next door neighbor, but you've got very different pictures about what you're going to be doing if you were fulfilling that purpose. You may be researching medical experiments. You may be writing a novel. You may be doing other kinds of things, or you may be being of great service. A lot of people in their retirement years are looking for ways to be of service to people given what they've learned in their lives. And so that may be what your vision is. So that's the vision. That'd be horizon four. So what's your vision? And is knowing, being clear about that going to help you decide what to do tonight? Yeah, a little bit more. Then you need to come down and say, okay, are there things you need to do over the next 3 to 24 months that are going to actually set that into place? So those are goals and objectives. And you may have some of those that things you want to accomplish by the end of 2020 or 2021. You know, what do you want to have in place? You know, are your retirements or your funds or your, you know, how you've managed your, you know, whatever all those things are as we start to get to the, you know, latter days of our lives. And then you have, okay, what are all the things you need to maintain? So then horizon two, by the way, the goals and objectives would be horizon three. So horizon two would be, okay, what are all the things you need to keep track of and make sure are okay? How's your health and your energy, and your vitality? How's your finances? How's your relationships? How's your still afterlife career if you have one or want to design one? And so that would be looking at the things around you in terms of your ecosystem. Are they in place appropriately enough? And many times people go, oh, you know, that reminds me, I need to. Yeah. Then you come down to horizon one, what are all the projects you have around all those things I just mentioned? Oh, yeah, I need to fix this tooth that I got a problem with. That's a project. I need to make sure that I'm set up in my new home office with my new technology and my new computer and get that all under cruise control. That's a project. And most people, at least in their mid to senior levels of professional life, have 30 to 100 projects. Given a project with the broad definition of something you can't finish in one sitting that you intend to complete or want to complete within the next year. And so there's all those things you got commitments about. And then there's all the actions you need to take about any of the moving parts of everything I just mentioned. You know, all the emails to send, all the stuff to buy at the store, all the things to talk to your life partner about, you know, yada yada, all the things to talk to your kids about. So, and most people have, you know, 100 to 200 of those just right now. So again, don't shoot the messenger. I didn't make it up. I'm just saying, look, those are all the commitments you've got. If you don't have them, fine. If you do, then you better make sure that you get objective about them and get them out of your head and get them in some sort of external maps so that you can take a look at those and feel comfortable about taking a nap instead of taking a nap to avoid your life.
So one thing that people are surprised about sometimes is they'll run into someone who's retired and they hear them exclaim, I'm busier than ever. And one common mistake I see some people make early in retirement is committing too early to too many things. All that free time can get filled up by others pretty quickly. How can people renegotiate commitments to regain some of their time and some of the control over their time?
You just look at it and say yes or no. This is not a big complex algorithm. Just take a look at all that and go, okay, which one do you really want to do right now? Which ones would make the biggest difference to you if you implemented those, if you moved on them? And by the way, there's nothing wrong with having tons of stuff to do. Come on. You know, you go to a restaurant. Isn't it nice to have lots of options to stuff to pick from in terms of what to eat? Mm-hmm. You know, so there's nothing wrong with a lot of options to choose from. It's just, what are you doing about that? Are you feeling bad that you're not doing all of those things? Well, come on. By the time you're retiring, hopefully you've grown up enough to know you can't do them all. You know, you can do anything, but not everything. So make some choices and then say, okay, let me try this for now. And I think for a lot of people, especially at retirement age, it's kind of nice to go, look, over the next 6 months, here's the thing I really want to focus on. or here's the thing this year I really want to do, I really want to put in place. And I'll put all these other on the back burner. If they show up, that's fine. But I'm not going to pressure myself to be having to move on to all that stuff. But those are always good, you know, healthy conversations to have with yourself.
As people approach retirement, they often think about moving. You did a small move with your wife, Catherine, from Ojai, California to Amsterdam. And
yes, small in quotes, right?
Yes. So what should people think about in planning a move that might not be top of mind to them today?
I don't know. A lot of it has to do with what's your picture of life and in terms of what do you want to be experiencing in your life in your latter days? Sense of fun, a sense of freedom, a sense of whatever. And a lot of that may be, look, I'm just going to go internal. So maybe the design of where you want to live has a lot to do with what's the style of where you're going to be and what kind of place you're going to be in. So it may have a lot to do with both location as well as the specifics of what kind of place you want to be living in. Is this assisted care you need to manage? You know, my wife and I are looking right now, I'll be 75 in a couple of months, so she's 61. So we're thinking of changing apartments or looking for another place, potentially a place to buy here in Amsterdam. And so our thoughts are like, gee, what if this is the last place we actually need to be in? So ground floor, so we don't have stairs to navigate and close enough to public transportation, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of those, and that's just practical stuff to be thinking about based upon where you want to go. What are the aspects of where you want to live? Or what are the aspects that you think you need to take care of or manage or have in place so you feel comfortable about that?
What's your daily life like these days, and how is it different prior to the move, before you moved?
Not really much different. I mean, one of the reasons we moved was because we wanted to get out of the U.S., just wanted to change our venue and wanted to be in Europe somewhere. My work was becoming pretty global and international. And so, you know, my work was still my work. I'm still doing that. And Catherine and I both, she's been with me and doing this work together for 30 years. So that didn't really change. It just, you know, the world became more virtual, and Amsterdam is much more the center of my universe than Santa Barbara was where we moved from. But that's not really that much has changed. We still have a wonderful dog. We have, you know, we love walking in the park. We love, and we have a pretty simple lifestyle, though we're still pretty much full-time in our virtual work that we're doing these days. So I don't know that I'll ever, quote, retire. I'm not sure what that would look like, because I've been doing this work for 35 years and couldn't stop if you asked me to. So,
what a great city. One of our daughters did a semester abroad in Amsterdam, so we had the chance to go.
It's a terrible place. You never want to come. It's dirty. It's dangerous. Stay away.
The canals, the bikes. It's just, yeah. So one of our earlier podcast guests, Helen Dennis, who writes a syndicated column called Successful Aging, said that joy isn't a word that people often use in talking about retirement, but it should be. And I noticed you created an affirmation with the word joyful in it. And I'm curious, how does that help you?
Oh, it always helps to focus on some positive thing instead of some negative thing. You know, not that the positive thing will show up, but it certainly is easier on your brain, easier on your body, you know, to be focusing on those things, just healthier. So, you know, I've worked with affirmations for, golly, since 1981, I discovered the power of those things. So how many years is that?
Yeah, it'd be 40, because we had our 40th anniversary. So like, that's a question I can answer.
Okay, 40 years ago. So I've been working with affirmations for 40 years, and that's just kind of a part of my life. I call, okay, I'm about to go do this event I never done before. Let me affirm what success would look, sound, or feel like in my own head. And I just know the power of that. It's like, it's almost practical mechanics, just in terms of, you know, using your brain to focus on positive stuff. Because the focusing on the positive stuff then also opens your mind to opportunities and options about fulfilling those things. You start, until you see yourself doing it, you won't see how to do it. So seeing yourself being successful, being happy. And for the most part, I imagine most people at retirement age are not really thinking so much about material success other than material comfort. That's probably, and health comfort, security and safety in terms of those kinds of things. And so, yeah, it's so great to have those images in mind as you think about any moves or any changes you might want to make in your life. I would keep in mind those kinds of things. And, you know, it's not just the physical stuff, which is, I think, important, but also the internal stuff. How would you like to be feeling? What is the sense of satisfaction or joy or fun or fulfillment or creativity that you want to be experiencing? And, you know, getting a little bit of a grip on that internally is always very healthy.
One thing I've noticed about your work over the years is questions are such a foundational part of GTD. And I'm wondering, what questions do you find yourself asking yourself these days that trigger some actions?
Well, a lot of it for us right now is okay, we're thinking, considering, you know, two big projects, which is moving to a place that might be our permanent place, as far as we know, for as we check out here, and immigrating. We intend to immigrate to the Netherlands. So those are big projects for us right now. So the questions are, what do I need to do to make that happen? How do I make that as easy as possible? There are a lot of how questions then that we're asking ourselves right now in terms of what we're doing.
And are any different questions coming up for you as we approach this or are in this current wave in the pandemic?
There's a serious curiosity about what that's going to do to our lifestyle, our income, because a lot of what's still our annuity has been building this business and creating licensees and partners that we're pretty much in an IP licensing business right now. So we still get royalties from all of these people's work. And all these people's work got seriously impacted by going on. So sort of checking regularly to see, are they able to come out from under this and using virtual versions of our work, which we've been developing for, you know, 3 or 4 years. And that, you know, that's working okay. But that's certainly one of the questions I have. As soon as the pandemic hit, one of my high suggestions is always to do, what's a worst case scenario and can you survive it? And so we did a worst case scenario. Everything crashed and burned. Could we live and could we feel okay? And that's okay. And so we did that so that we didn't have to be afraid of that driving our thinking. And then play it by ear. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's what came to mind as you asked.
Oh, sure. And what have you learned during this period of the pandemic?
That's a good question. I've learned how interesting it is when people are thrown into surprise and change situations they weren't expecting that had a potential negative impact, how people are responding to that and who's getting back in the driver's seat about it and dealing with it. And so a lot of it's about sort of validating sort of this getting things done methodology I uncovered, which is the best way to deal with surprise. How do I take the new stuff that's come in? How do I integrate that? How do I process it? How do I incorporate that into my gestalt of all the stuff I'm doing? And how do I now refocus so I'm in the driver's seat? It doesn't make life fun, but it could, but it makes it puts you back in the driver's seat as opposed to being run over by the bus. So just interesting to see how many more people are now having to deal with that, you know, than before.
And the pandemic is changing so much about how we live. And curious how you think we should be thinking about our living spaces, both short term and perhaps longer term.
My living spaces. Well, I think your space is always critical. What space do you have to meditate? What space do you have to do work you want to do work in? Is your space comfortable for you? Is it inspiring to you? Is it something that facilitates it? You know, a lot of people, quite frankly, never thought too much about the why question. Why do you have a living room? Most people don't. Most people don't live in their living room. Right? Why do you have a living room? I was coaching and working with a lot of kids on Wall Street back in the high-flying 90s. They were just making so much money, and they were buying these houses out in Connecticut and New Jersey. And they just took the living rooms of these mansions, and they just made them into their office because they had the best light. It was next to the kitchen. Yeah. That's really smart. So I would ask, anybody ask, why do you have that desk? Why is the desk you have? Is there a better one you need? Why do you have that space there that's set up? What are you doing there? What are you doing where you live in your ecosystem? What are the purposes for those things you have? I constantly have to ask myself, gee, David, why do you still have that file in your drawer? Just throw away. Because, you know, again, crap self-generates. It doesn't self-destruct. Yeah. So just by the passage of time, things change their nature and change their importance to you. So sort of, in a sense, being organized or in a sense, having your life as current and viable to you and comfortable to you is a constant process. You don't have to redo your files every day, but how about every year or so? You might want to go through them and clean out the stuff you don't need anymore and put some new stuff in that you do need. So kind of rethinking your environment, your ecosystem is always a good thing to do. As a matter of fact, now, a whole lot of people are doing that because of the pandemic. They now have to be at home and they're sitting around going, gee, this is really not the kind of space I like. Let me go. I was reading how many small desks IKEA and other companies have been selling.
Yes. It's wild.
In the last few months. As a matter of fact, I was just talking to our accountants here in the Netherlands and Amsterdam. And I was saying, well, you're dealing with businesses that are sort of crashing given the pandemic. They said, yeah. But they said some of them are like going gangbusters. I said, like who? They said renovation. Because people are now at home. They're going, we really ought to redo the kitchen. Or we really ought to redo it. So the companies out there that are in the renovation of the great, you know, Amsterdam buildings are, you couldn't get them if you tried in terms of, you know, their schedules. They're booked solid. So it's funny, but I think that people are rethinking their environment simply because they now need to spend a lot more time in them.
And what triggered that question for me was your 2-minute tips for turbulent times. In a number of them, you have in the background this wonderful design within reach bookcase that's vertical, with which I've subsequently ordered.
Yeah.
And I can see changes coming to our living room soon after this conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Yay. It's a good company. Thanks. I'm glad they're still around. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So I was wondering if you could just share your thoughts on what I think is one of the bedrock pieces of your methodology, and that's the weekly review. So for me, I found in my full-time working career days in New York, I found Friday afternoon to be the perfect zone to do it. And I've kept that up. And I do actually the mind sweep Friday afternoon, and then Sunday, I do the formal weekly review. And it changes everything, I find, in terms of having that constant place to come back and reassess and line up things ahead. But I'm just wondering if you could just talk a little bit about the weekly review and why you think it's so important.
It's like managing the forest instead of hugging the trees. Tree hugging is fine. We all do that day long. I need to change this light bulb. I need to write this article. I need to respond to this email. I need to go, you know, yada, yada. So we're all down in the weeds sort of regularly. But if you don't pull up from the weeds on some consistent basis, so that you know which weeds you need to be in, you're going to be driven by latest and loudest instead of some strategic intuitive intelligence. So the ability to be able to get some sort of a perspective on your life and work is just absolutely critical. And you're right. And it's probably the most challenging habit for people who sort of get my methodology to build in. So congratulations to you that you built it in as a habit, you know, because it's tough. It's like planning. When you most need to do it, you least feel like doing it. So, you know, when you're most sort of feeling out of control and driven by the sundries of life is when you most need to sit down, back up, take a breath, take a look at the whole game again, and then refocus. So it does sort of require you to do a kind of a counterintuitive thing, which is when you don't feel like looking at the whole thing, you need to look at the whole thing. So that it makes you feel more comfortable about the whole thing, to your point. So it could be a weekly review. A lot of people do monthly weekly reviews, and God bless them, you know, at least that. Or once a year, let me review my life, or once a month, let me review my finances or whatever. So there's some sort of reflection or review process. Anybody listening to this who uses a calendar is already doing that. If you've looked at your calendar, you know, in the last few days or hours or whatever, you're already doing a backup. Let me see a bigger game here, sort of locate myself in space and time. So again, since the complexity of people's lives is a lot more than most people really realize, building in some sort of a structured format so you can lift back up and take a look at all of that. But you can't do a weekly review really well unless you have a project list. And most people don't even have a project list or anything close to that. And so you need to make sure that when you're reviewing stuff. But come on, people have often said these days, especially, hey, David, look, what if nobody's ever heard of GTD before, but you just said, look, give me two tips right away. I go, okay, get everything out of your head, and once a week, look at it all. You can't beat that. Again, don't shoot the messenger. People get mad at me for their list. I'm going, I'm sorry, it's not my list, guys. It's yours. You know, your choice is where do you want to track it, and how do you want to be waked up at 3 o'clock in the morning by it, or do you want to do some sort of conscious, cognitive assessment of your stuff on some consistent basis? And that's where the weekly review comes in.
That is such a great pair of tips. GTD on a bumper sticker. Seems like, for those who are into GTD listening, one of the things I've noticed over the years is you've had a lot of conversations with GTD Connect and other places about paper versus digital. And just want to check in with your current observations on you're thinking how people are using paper versus digital in using GTD.
I actually don't know. I haven't done any serious surveys, but I know, given all the people that I know who played GTD, pretty much like me, my capture mode is pretty much paper. I mean, I just carry a little wallet around with me with a little pad in it, and I've got one on my desk right here. So capturing is, I don't have to click anything. I don't have no batteries. I have no Wi-Fi necessary to get stuff out of my head when it occurs to me. And so my capture process is pretty much low tech. So you can't beat paper for that. Not that you have to. You could use your digital world, but many people's digital world is kind of a black hole. They throw stuff in there. They don't deal with it. You know, so paper's great. And so I write stuff down, throw it all in my own physical in tray. So my low tech system for capturing is highly functional, still is for me, has been for years. However, then I have my organization, and my system is digital because I like that world, and you know, I'm in that world. So I have digital lists, you know, that are on all my different appliances, which is nice. But then many times, as a matter of fact, I just printed out my prescription. My pharmacy just sent me an email that they now have my prescription, that whatever. And I just printed that out because I need to take that with me to the pharmacy. I'm not going to try to click on something while I'm in the pharmacy on a digital basis. I just take this piece of paper. I write my birth date on it because they need to see that. And then they go get my stuff. It's so much easier. So many times I'm getting paper printouts of my digital stuff because it's much easier to navigate with that than it is to try to fumble around with clicks and all that other stuff. I still don't even use Apple Pay or any of those online. I actually, when we could travel again, any of those things, I print them out. It's a whole lot easier than trying to fumble with click, 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 click. And maybe that's because I'm 75, but and any of that works. But I just say what works the best. There's what's the fastest, what's the easiest, or whatever. And people that are, that these millennials that grumble about paper, I'm going, oh, come on, get real.
And one thing you mentioned in passing, I just wanted to highlight, because it's been a game changer for me, is the note taker wallet.
Yeah.
Which I still use. I've got a new version of the wallet, but I had the original. But I still have my David Allen pen. But that works so well, especially as I get older. Just be able to jot down things in the moment, in real time, no matter where you are. So the portability, you can't beat it. One last question for you, David, and I appreciate you taking all the time. If people want to learn more about GTD, there's the original book. I've read that several times. You've got other books as well. And I noticed that you came out with the GTD workbook. How can people best learn about your system if they want to explore it further?
Well, that's probably the fastest way to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not a really good trainer. I don't have the patience. So I wrote Getting Things Done as a manual of the 25 or 30 years of my experience. I just put it all in there. And then people could take and choose and pick and choose from that as they wished for it. But again, as we've been in the training and coaching business, you know, I've had a lot of instructional designers, a lot of people say, God, David, that's just too much for people to try to digest. If you're brand new to this game and you just pick up Getting Things Done, it might seem a little daunting to you because there's so much in there. It's actually simple stuff, but it feels like and looks like a lot. So what we did was we just said, okay, and I co-authored with a friend of mine to write a workbook to say, okay, here's the 10 steps that walk you into this. It doesn't denigrate the process. It's still the process, but it's like the 10 easy things you can do with my little QR codes, and you can snip on it and see me talk for a minute or two about the thing that you just read in the workbook, and you know, it walks you into it. So that's why we did it, mainly to lower the barrier of entry for people to actually play. What's funny, a couple of years ago, we published the Getting Things Done for Teens, for teenagers, because we'd had so much pressure in all these years to say, God, I wish I'd have learned this when I was 12, or gee, I wish my kids got this at age 12. So, you know, with two great co-authors, you know, we created that book. And a lot of adults see that book and go, wow, that's easier for me to deal with because it's got cartoons, cartoons in there, you know, a little easier read, you know, essentially. And none of it steps down the process, but that's why we did that. And I just felt there was a need out there for the world to be able to have a little easier way to engage with the process.
Cartoons are always welcome and helpful. And I actually gave that to our youngest, our son, who went off to college in August in person in Boston, but for the first time. So he's being indoctrinated as well. But any final thoughts or advice for people listening in terms of how they might want to think about applying this to their retirement life?
Yeah. I don't know if you've run across this, Joe, but a friend of mine, Daniel Levitin, who's head of cognitive science, you know, if you know his book, Successful Aging,
I noticed the book in the background on your video, in your videos.
It's an incredible book. It's a must read if you're over 50, know people over 50, going to think you're going to live over 50.
Absolutely.
You know, what Dan did was he curated 4,000 of the most recent studies about what denigrates as you age and what you can you accelerate as you age, but it doesn't happen automatically. So for instance, learning a new language or learning something new that creates new pathways in your brain is going to keep your brain much more alive and well and interested in life. If you've played chess all your life, playing more chess is not going to do it. If you've played chess all your life, learn Go or learn bridge or play the flute. Do something different than your brain has done before. So things like that. The book is just full of that. So Successful Aging, Daniel Levitin. He's a friend of mine. He's a GTD-er. It's a fabulous book. So for obviously for your audience, a must read.
Highly recommend. I would echo everything about that you said. I went back to school and finished a master's in gerontology at age 60 because I've never been old before. Figured it might come in handy. But of course, when that book came out, I was all over that because that's right up my alley. But it is just jam-packed with solid research and it's accessible. I think that's a big thing. It makes it accessible and practical and useful.
Yeah,
David, thanks so much for taking the time to walk us through this and continue to thank you for the impact of your work. It's been very, very helpful.
Thanks, Joe. This has been fun. So hopefully this has been useful for people.
I really appreciate David Allen taking time to share his methodology with us today. And I think it really hits on two things that most people are looking for as they transition from corporate life to the retirement phase of life and later life. And that's clarity and control. And while things shift and you have a different list of things that are demanding your time and attention, his methodology gives you a way to keep track of them. As he said, get them out of your head and be able to step back and prioritize. I loved his two-part summary of his methodology. Get things out of your head and step back and take a look at them from time to time on a regular basis. I can tell you that really goes a long way, and I think it's worth considering in terms of its tool set that can really help you get to where you want to go in the transition to retirement. He has two video series. We'll include links them in the show notes. He's got a ton of videos online, but two that caught my attention recently. Came out with one during the beginning of the pandemic called 2-Minute Tips for Turbulent Times. Short videos, questions, reflections, very helpful. And I think very timely now to revisit, given the fact of we're in another spike here in the US and elsewhere in the world. So it can be very useful. And then he has a newer one that's subtitled Freedom, Focus, GTD. And more about the methodology, and again, very relevant. My takeaways are clarity, control, keep it simple, get things out of your head, into a trusted system, step back and review them from time to time, and keep your priorities straight, and take control of your future. Thanks for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.